Welcome to Attention Confidential, the podcast where we explore deep self-awareness, bold curiosity, and passionate advocacy for both ourselves and our communities. Some voices you'll recognize, others will remain a mystery, but they all share one thing: the courage to be seen and heard by speaking up about what matters most to them. Now, my goal for this show is threefold. I want to hold space, ask the big and tough questions, and ultimately amplify the voices that need it most. The original music, as featured on Attention Confidential, was written, composed, and produced by Christopher Colley Biondi, a deaf pianist, composer, and dear friend in Central Kentucky who generously provided his skills and talent to support the launch of this podcast. Hey, weirdos and queerdos, in support of safety, please be advised that this podcast contains explicit language and direct or indirect references to material which some listeners may find triggering. Topics are highly personal and intimate, likely to touch on themes including but not limited to abuse, bigotry, body image, disability, mental health, sexuality, and trauma. Please prioritize your safety and the safety of those around you who may be exposed to this material, especially young folks. Please also note this is an ongoing project, which means I am actively engaged in learning while creating. The format, the tools, and skills to produce this material are all new to me. As I build and refine, I ask that you understand there may be kinks along the way. I am your host, Maggie Green, and I'm here to remind you your voice matters and your stories are safe here. What does that mean exactly, safe? In my work and personal brand and style, trust is serious business. So is confidentiality. I believe in honoring things like agency and choice and privacy. This show empowers guests by inviting them to speak freely and openly while protecting their personal details, if that helps make them feel safe. Welcome to another episode of Attention Confidential, where we explore three key themes: self-awareness, curiosity, and advocacy, all in a safe container. You may recall something special about this show is that guests have the chance to remain anonymous if that helps make them feel safe. Sharing our identities with others is such a generous gift, and today's guest has chosen to share that. I'm delighted to have her on today's episode. Shelly and I have known each other for a while. We have a pretty interesting backstory. I don't think we'll get into in this episode, but perhaps I'll include in the notes just for context. Lots of amazing things that I could say about Shelly. I think it's probably best if I pass the mic to her and have her introduce herself. Shelly, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Maggie. Really appreciate it. I appreciate being invited to Attention Confidential. My name is Shelly. I am a cheerleader at heart. I love people. I have come a long way since I was a young girl with stage fright, and I think we'll talk a little bit about that in just a moment. But I love helping people and being around people. I actually draw my energy from being around people. And so on any given day, I'm looking forward to being in the presence of others. My story, as I alluded to a little bit earlier about having stage fright, actually prevented me from being in front of people. I could talk to folks one-on-one, but because I was so scared to stand in front of people, to use my voice, to amplify my voice, lift my voice in any way, that kept me from being in front of folks. And it took me decades to get over that, and working also with a speaking company as well as doing some additional work around confidence and understanding that the reason why I was having such a hard time was because I lacked confidence. And when you lack confidence, it's hard to stand in front of a group of people and talk.
You know, that I feel like that is the perfect introduction into our first segment, the self-awareness piece, right? We call it your mirror. So, heard you mention stage fright. This has clearly been something that you've had experience with. Can you tell us a story? Can you tell us a story, a stage fright story? Like, take us back to where you were and help us
get to where you are today with respect to standing in front of audiences and lifting up your voice? What does that look like? What did it feel like? Who was involved?
Yeah, I used to sing in the choir at church, and whenever I was asked to either speak in a setting where there were a lot of people in front of me or would be a lot of people in front of me, and I've done this. My parents put me in dance class. I was in a spelling bee twice. I was a cheerleader, ballet, tap, acrobatics. I did all of the right things in terms of trying to understand how to move past my stage fright. But I didn't quite get there until I spoke with a friend who has spoken all around the world, and she gave me the most valuable piece of advice that I still practice today. And that is, whenever you have an opportunity to speak, go to the place where you're speaking. Get there early. If you're on stage, walk back and forth across the stage. That's something I've instituted, and practice or stand on the stage, because the first time you speak, you don't want that to be when they call your name, or the first time you stand on that stage, you don't want that to be when they call your name.
Yeah.
It sounds like a very small thing. Arrive early, stand on the stage, maybe practice, become familiar, but it takes away the jitters. Mm-hmm. And I practiced that. It was 2018. And I was on a panel speaking on behalf of an organization that I was affiliated with at the time. And myself and the other two panelists, we approached the stage when they called our names. But we had already been standing there beforehand during practice or rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And we walked up there, and we, at the end, were complimented by professional speakers. And I thought, okay, there's something to this.
Yeah.
And so I implemented that each time afterward, and then had an opportunity to work for a speaking company that helped as well, where I would write as well as deliver content. That also helped a lot and in building the confidence. But what I realized is that you can have all the training that one could think of. So again, ballet, tap, acrobatics, all stage time, recital, stage time, mm-hmm. cheerleading in front of a pageant, as well as a spelling bee, speaking at church or wherever. I had all of those opportunities, and I had relatively good training. I just didn't have the confidence, and lacking that confidence really, really hurts when that's what you need in order to stand up and speak in front of people.
It's the
missing piece of the puzzle, for sure.
I'm having flashbacks to, I guess, sophomore or junior year in college. We're talking about fear and confidence and all of these things. And there's this phrase, you know, do it scared. I've definitely had experience with stage fright. I still sometimes get, I call it glitter guts, you know, butterflies in the belly. But I'm thinking specifically of the public speaking courses that I elected to take in college. And it was because I was afraid. Mm-hmm. I was like, I know that this is, I won't call it a weakness or a deficit. It was a learning opportunity. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'm going to put myself in front of this. I'm going to look it right in the eye, mm-hmm. right? And that is probably, at least as far as stage fright is concerned and confidence building, one of the single most important decisions I made. And I ended up getting a really great grade in the class, got a lot of good experience. Like I said, still suffer from stage fright on occasion. Usually when it's something that's really, really close to my heart, I get really passionate. And maybe you can relate to that.
I can. And I also took a public speaking class in college. What they didn't teach us then was about breathing.
Oh my gosh. Right? I'm still working on that.
Yes.
Breathing's the hardest part.
It sounds
so simple.
And you have to do that. And you have to be able to command the room. So there were a lot of conversations about, okay, this is what you're going to say. Now deliver that. But not enough about the backstory. You have to prepare. Yes, prepare content, but prepare yourself.
Your body, your
right?
brain.
Your body, your brain, right. to be able to stand in front of a group of people and deliver that content. So, yeah, I think also I found my voice speaking up for other people. being an advocate, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later, but being an advocate for people, I found my voice when I was doing some consulting work around an organization that worked with domestic violence survivors, families, women and children primarily, and lifting my voice on their behalf. Both in writing, because I wrote an article where the organization was interviewed by the newspaper. So I had a piece of that, as well as speaking on behalf of the women and children we served, really turned me around in terms of, well, why are you not using your voice? Because there are women and children who feel that they cannot speak for themselves. Yet you have a voice, you have a platform, people will listen, but you're not using your voice. And so that completely shifted me from I'm afraid and I'm not going to, I can't do this, I'm not strong enough, to I must speak on behalf of the women and children that we serve.
You know what I heard, actually, and you didn't say it, but it's like, it's not about you.
It isn't.
You've been given this tool, right? This resource, access to this amazing thing that could really be powerful, and you're denying it, you know? You're denying the world the opportunity. Yeah, that's a wake-up call is what it sounds like.
It was a wake-up call, and I never thought I'd find my place or my footing in through the business that I had at the time, and I still have, but the consulting work. I never thought that that's where my speaking would really kind of take off. And from there, it did. I started advocating for people, continued to do some other work, both in the private sector as well as local municipal government. Really enjoyed being that person that could, one, connect people to others that, for whatever the situation, would make a difference, but speaking on their behalf. And so that led me into nonprofit work from where I had been in for-profit work for quite some time. So I did gather the skills when I was in for-profit, sales and marketing and relationship building skills and all of those things. But I really found my voice and a way to amplify the missions of organizations and to help people in nonprofit. So I used those for-profit skills for the good, right? And put them to good use in nonprofit work. Not that there's anything wrong with using them in for-profit or corporate,
right?
But I found another use for them, which I think not many do. And so I enjoyed my time in corporate and also in government and in consulting or as an entrepreneur, but then again also in nonprofit. And that's where I am today.
Something else that came up for me as you were sharing is this idea of, you know, and it's come up in talk therapy for me and a lot of my associates, colleagues, and friends, like, to understand a concept conceptually, right, or intellectually is a whole different beast, let's say, from actually putting it into practice. So I'm thinking about public speaking, like, yeah, it's the content, it's the writing, it's the preparation, all those things, but the actual walk of it, you know, going through the motions and that practice piece, I think maybe gets lost on some folks, or maybe that's where they sort of trip up a little bit. So I appreciate the reminder and the context of your own experience, so that folks who are out there like, oh, I could never do that. You can. Mm-hmm. You're going to get it here first, and then you're going to feel it in your body if you give yourself that opportunity. And that will, I mean, you're evidence of it, right? Once you take that leap, you know, who knows what can happen after that? That's pretty awesome. So you mentioned, as far as your professional experience, you have literally been in just about every possible sector, every possible size of a business. The first thing that comes to mind is leaders, leadership, that interesting mix of the contributors, right? Like the people, let's say, on the front line, whatever that might be. We've got middle managers who are the next tier. And obviously, in a lot of these spaces, there's some kind of hierarchy. So when I think leader, there's someone at the top, maybe, who's calling the shots or is taking the responsibility and accountability for the whole. Can we talk about leadership?
About leadership. Let's do it.
Did you think I'd ever ask? Please, no.
Glad to talk about leadership. Absolutely. Leadership, to me, starts with being proactive. I've seen excellent leadership, and I've seen some really bad leadership in my career and just in general as well. And what I have taken away from each one is there are nuggets from each experience that I can look at and I can say, I would have done that differently, or that was really good. I'm going to kind of file that away and keep it for if I ever have that situation. But there are some not so good leadership examples where I've walked away and I've said, I know I will never do that. And so you're taught lessons through the process of leadership as you are making your way through your career.
If it's not clear, listeners, I probably should have said this at the top of the segment. We're moving on to magnifying glass now. We're diving into curiosity. So that is, you know, leadership is at the heart, I think, of this segment. I have tons of questions, and I know you have tons of stories. So a couple that come to mind, like, if you're willing to share, like, what is it, first of all? What does leadership or good leadership look like? And what is leadership not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I appreciate this question so much because it is about what we're aiming for. There are no perfect leaders. And so we are aiming to be a good leader in how we bring our teams forward, how we project when we are talking, acting, doing in front of others. And so I like to break leaders, the word leaders, down into a series of words that spell leaders. So when I think of leaders, I think of listeners, but I also think of learners, because yeah. when you are leading, you are listening and you're learning, especially if you're working with a team. I also think of being empathetic as well as energetic and really carrying that energy through to your team or the individuals whom you're leading. I also think of emotional intelligence, which I think is probably the point where some leaders, that's where they kind of go off into a different lane and it becomes what you shouldn't look at or consider when you're a leader, or again, mm-hmm. bad leadership. So being emotionally intelligent is important. That self-awareness, which we just talked about just a moment ago, and having that self-awareness and understanding what your presence means. I'm going to stay on E one more time and say executive presence. So leaders have executive presence. When they walk into the room, there's an air, if you will, but not an air of superiority.
Thank you for clarifying.
Not an air of superiority. Yeah. And I probably should have started out by saying, when someone says leadership, I can imagine that there are several who may be listening here now, but just people in general who think of power and control as their first two top words for leadership. How you exhibit your power and the position that you take, the posture that you take, is very important. So being in control, there are people who exhibit power in a way that is not positive. It is not helpful for the people whom they're working with. And so I tend to stay away from power and control in that sense, because a lot of people think that, well, if I'm the leader, then I'm in control, and it's what I tell you is what you do.
I'm the boss.
And
right?
I'm the boss, right? Mm-hmm. And those days are gone.
Yes.
If I could say anything right now to everyone.
Let us hope they are.
Those days should be gone. So yeah. So leaders are listeners and learners. They're empathetic, energetic. They have emotional intelligence. They have that level of enthusiasm, but they're also authentic. If you are working for a leader that always looks so put together and is so structured that nothing ever seems to be out of place, whether it's the hair on their head or their suit jacket or not jacket, whatever it is that they're wearing, there needs to be a level of authenticity with your leadership so that people know that you're real, that you care about who they are and what they're feeling. If your leader never asks you how you're doing, stop. And that they don't stop and ask you how you're doing, looking you in your eyes and asking you that question. They don't really care. We've all brushed by someone and said, "Hey, how you doing?" And we're halfway down the hallway before they're answering, right? But as a leader, you have to take those moments and pause and ask people. So authenticity is important. You also have to understand how to activate your talents, your skills, and those of the talents and skills of those who are on your team. That activation. And then leaders are also deliberate in their decision making, always.
Can we go back to A? Because I just thought of something.
What what did you think of?
Well, the authenticity piece and the way you were describing, like, actually walking up and, you know, listening plays a role in that. When you say, how are you doing? Right. And you make that connection. I thought about approachability. And if you are so buttoned up and rigid and you've got your kingdom behind the mm-hmm. glass or whatever, mm-hmm. and people think you are the boss and in control and all about power, there is no, like, there's no space. There's no approachability.
Right.
You've got to be able to walk up to your leader, you know, and it's not so much about how they look. It's definitely an attitude. It's an energy. But yeah, I'm tapped into the letters now, and I'm like, hold on. If your staff can't come to you and mm-hmm. say, maybe I'm not doing so hot, or I need support, or whatever mm-hmm. it is, like, is that a good leader? I don't know.
No, and so I'm so glad that you said that. I used to be the president of a board some years back for an organization, and it was a volunteer position, but I did lead the board. There were about 17 of us and on the board, but several hundred members. And I said when I became president that I wanted to be accessible and approachable yeah. as a leader. And so you just nailed that with what you shared in that moment. In that time that I was the president, I made it a point to be as many places as I could and to make myself available and approachable to people. So members would come up to me, some I knew, some I didn't know, but I got to know over time. And that's what happens when you are able to build that connection and that relationship with people, those you don't know. If you're looking at them and directly in their eyes and you're saying, and they're saying something to you, and then you're responding and you're listening in a caring way, and then the next time you see them, you ask them something along the same line, they know that you care. They know that they can come back to you and, yeah. and that you're accessible to them, that you're not just this person with this title that sits in some room somewhere with, you know, glass windows all around, which is beautiful, but it's not helpful for your team to think that they can't talk to you. You know, people talk about open door policies. Okay, you can have an open door all you want, but if the person has a snarl on their face or acts if like they don't want to talk in, or yeah. they're afraid to walk in, it doesn't really matter that the door is open.
That's right.
And so I do have, you know, the ERS of leaders, and that is empowering people. As leaders, your job is to empower and encourage people to be resourceful. There's your R. To represent not yourself, but your team, your organization, mission that you're carrying, the values that are put forward, you're representing that. And so when you're resourceful, you're eliminating barriers. And when you're the representative, what are you doing? You're speaking, you're talking with other people, you're getting those resources yeah. that your team really needs. And then for the S, I think this one probably, everyone is probably already saying it, strategic. Leaders are strategic. They are looking far down the road to make sure that not only where we are today is covered, but what is the process, the iterative process, really, that we need to go through to make sure that 3 to 5 years down the road, everything's going to be okay. So whether it's mm-hmm. a strategic planning process or another type of process that allows them to look further than what's happening right now. And leaders are supportive. Mm-hmm. They are supportive. If someone's having a hard time, again, being authentic, being approachable, accessible, and mm-hmm. all those things, leaders are also supportive of what's happening. When people, maybe they need time off, or maybe they're going through a hard time in their life for whatever reason, or mm-hmm. someone could have passed away. Whatever the situation, being supportive and being there present. We talked about executive presence, but also being present in your conversations, which goes back to listening. And when you listen, you learn. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much about people just listening and letting them share with me different things yeah. that, again, the two of us have that connection from that point on.
It occurs to me that maybe someone who hasn't explored this on any deep level or doesn't have, let's say, like the depth of field experience that you do, it might be easy for them to see like authenticity and strategic as like at odds with one another. Mm-hmm. When I think about strategy, it's absolutely like you were describing the long haul, right? Mm-hmm. There's what it looks like today. what our mission is or whatever our objectives, our goals, and then what does this look like down the line? Because we're going to have, maybe we'll have that same mission, that same through line, mm-hmm. but different goals and all. Your strategy, if you are an authentic person, you're an authentic leader, your strategy is informed by all of those things, like, you know, your shared values as part of the organization. So, like, you know, you're talking about listening and thinking about talk therapy again, too, like this active listening thing. You can tell when a leader is faking it to be strategic. You know what I mean? They're, I think of the word, like the term glad handing, like, and baby kissing and things like that. Like, if you mean it, it's going to leave a different impression, a different flavor and energy in your community than if you're doing it, like, just to check a box because someone says this is part of the playbook. How do you reconcile authenticity and strategy?
Attention Confidential is sponsored, produced, and distributed by Self Magnitude LLC, an ethical microbusiness on a mission to transform how you see yourself. It is hosted by Maggie Green, personal brand and style strategist for weirdos and queerdos of all ages and gender expressions, who is also the face and voice behind Self Magnitude, helping people feel seen since 2020. If you're looking for support on embodying all aspects of your identity, and showing up as your radically authentic self in person, in print, and online, please visit Maggie's 100% DIY website at selfmagnitude.com.
When I walk into organizations, whether I'm volunteering or I'm working for them, or I walk in with my full self. I'm Shelley with the wind at my back, mm-hmm. the passion at my front, and I'm bringing my whole self to the organization. I work for an organization that had a strategic plan, knew what they wanted, the plan that I think they might have been in the first year of the plan at the time that I arrived. And I looked at it. I did. I read it. I read through it. And I thought, okay, that's great that you all decided that. But now I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the organization at the time had a deficit, a pretty deep deficit. This was a nonprofit. Had a pretty deep deficit. And I thought, that's great that you all took the time to bring everyone together and to really look at the organization and decide that in 3 years, and now you're 1 year in, but in 3 years, this is where you were going to be and sort of how you were going to get there. But I can tell you from experience that given where things stand today, I'm not sure where they were when you initially created the strategic plan, but where they are today, which is the day that I came on board, you're not going to get there. And clearly, they didn't realize they wouldn't get there. When I started, I didn't even know what the deficit was. And they wouldn't tell me. I had to discover it through some other matters. And so I discovered it. And I have to tell you, there is an upside to this story, because in about 8.5 months, that deficit went to a surplus, meaning the deficit was actually cleared and it left a healthy surplus after that, in 8.5 months. After that, I didn't hear about a strategic plan.
Yeah, no. Right.
I mean, it's there and it's in existence, and I'm sure
it looks good on paper.
It looks good on paper and what have you, but it wasn't going to work. And so my authenticity said, this is who I am. This is the person that you hired. You needed a turnaround. I'm going to give you a turnaround, but we're going to have to do it a different way. And that's real talk, as it said.
Right.
And that's my authenticity. Strategy wise, I was already thinking, well, the way to get there is this way, this way, this way. We've got internal stakeholders. We've got people already lined up. They actually need to be stewarded a little bit more and better.
Engaged and nourished.
In order to even get to engagement, right? They need to be nourished more in order to even get to that point. And I can tell you that over the period of about a year, maybe a little bit more than a year, the organization saw folks coming back. to the organization, increase partnerships, increase in number of community members that either wanted to support in a volunteer way, which for a nonprofit is a doorway, entry doorway to then supporting, contributing monetarily. So all of that was happening, records being set in terms of fundraising, because I'm a fundraiser at heart, mm-hmm. in the nonprofit space. So we saw all of that happening, but it wasn't because of the strategic plan that had been written. It was because really my authenticity led to, we have to change things in order for there to be a change. Otherwise, where things stood previously is probably where we're going to end up.
I would say, based on what you've shared today, that you're a pretty darn good leader, right?
Thank you.
I get that. You've got good leader energy. Can you help us decode, I guess, or deconstruct the opposite of that?
Like, yeah.
When we say a red flag, or like, what are we looking for? So you've painted a really clear picture of the things that make a good leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about the folks out there who are like, well, I'm in this situation and I don't see any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
What are they likely seeing? What's the other side? What is a leader not? How about that?
Yeah, leader, any individual who sits back and allows things to happen. And if it happens repetitively, it just, you know, compounds the issue.
Mm-hmm.
To allow things to happen and blow up, if you will, explode, and basically not do anything about it until it explodes. That is...
You said proactive first thing.
Reactive. So this is reactive,
yeah,
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Being myopic in view, like, this is what we're doing, this is where we're going. There's no additional creativity or innovation around whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's a program or something that you provide, the way, the pathway, the process. No one wants to change anything.
That's
but
the
very
opposite of strategic, yeah, looking at the long
opposite
haul.
Of strategic,
you're,
yeah.
You're like right here, just the end of your nose, right?
And then some kind of personal behaviors, I'll say, things like being dismissive.
Yeah.
Condescending.
Yeah.
I'm better than you.
Oh,
superiority,
yeah,
complex. We talked a little bit about that,
mm-hmm,
earlier. Unprofessional, whether it's in speech, it's in the way that they carry themselves, sometimes in the way that they dress, because that does still happen. I've seen that happen,
I think it's a
actually.
Trust thing. Do you? What do you think? I mean, if you show up with a external indication that you don't actually care about the people, about yourself, about your, you know, I feel like it's really hard to trust that person.
It is, but you could have a well-dressed person whose behavior is unprofessional.
Yes, that's an important piece of clarification.
Condescending, manipulative,
right.
Like, we can give all the adjectives there. But you could also have someone who is a leader, maybe not as necessarily well-dressed, with the warmest heart. Great listener,
yeah,
always there, present. You need them, they're there. You're looking for a representative, you're looking for resources, you know you can go to that person.
Mm-hmm.
But those who are not necessarily good readers are more manipulative, and they're volatile in their behavior. When things start to shake, not only are they uncertain and unsettled, it looks like that when they're in that situation. Like, crisis management, they would need a crisis manager,
right,
to manage them.
Yeah.
To manage them in the situation, right? In addition, mm-hmm, to the fact that there's a crisis going on and someone needs to manage the crisis. So, I mean, those are just a few of the traits I would with you about what leaders are not. And if any of your listeners are running into these situations, especially the one, I find this one very common. Let's just let things blow up and then we'll deal with it then. That's kind of leads to the crisis management piece.
Mm.
And then everyone is,
reactive.
It's a very volatile, reactive, mm-hmm, you know, and then the leader's not well put together enough. If a leader looks disheveled or like they're not settled within themselves about what's happening, everyone else is going to panic as well. And we understand panic, but it's up to the, for your team probably, but it's up to the leader to calm the team. And you can't do that if you're not in a space where you're calm.
Thinking about a former, well, I'll call him a boss. I won't call him a leader. He was my immediate supervisor. And I won't disclose this person's identity, but I will say that in my initial interviews, I was warned, and with a word that at the time I wasn't familiar with. They said mercurial, like mercury in a thermometer, up and down and warm and cold. And it was never consistent, never predictable. And it didn't matter what you did or didn't do, you know, as an individual contributor, like whatever his mood or the weather, I mean, it could have been anything. He just never knew.
Yeah.
You say volatile. And I think about that, like, again, about the trust piece too. Like if you are zen, right? Through the best and the worst of circumstances. Mm-hmm. Like, that is someone you know you can really lean on and trust, which strikes me as that's probably a good leader. The zen, opposed to...
And people are looking. They're watching for your movement,
right.
For your signal. Mm-hmm. Leaders give signals, whether they realize it or not, in your behavior.
Not orders.
They don't give orders. Signals. They give signals in your behavior, in your facial expressions, in your body language, sometimes in how you dress, if it's a little more provocative. There are some folks who do. Leaders give signals. And that signal is, well, the leader did it, so well, then so can I. Which is not true, right?
Yeah.
But as leaders, we have to be very conscientious of the signals that we're giving to people, letting them know that it is or is not appropriate, or that it will or will not meet our expectations, or that we'll be supportive of whatever it is that they're doing. So, yeah, we could talk a long time about leadership, but even more so the stories.
Do you have perhaps a short story, maybe, that either illustrates what a good leader is or what a good leader is not. Just from your own experience.
Goodness,
where do you start?
The difficulty is going to be which one of these stories I tell. I believe I'll go back a few years to when I served as the president of the board. I talked about that a little bit earlier, and I was leading a team, and it was during the pandemic, and the board was set to have its retreat, and it was the middle of the winter. Kind of must have been, it was sometime during the pandemic. And we would have traveled on a bus together about 4 hours to get to the destination we were going. And again, this was during the pandemic. So we're still a little concerned about potential spread and transmission and what have you.
Of course.
And the place that we were going, and I happened to be looking at it on television, the state that we were going to at the time, I won't name it, there was a 300%+ increase in new cases in this one state, just in the state, the week before we were set to go. And so talked to the board, said, you know, we're in some conversations, we're going to make a decision, but I need to let everyone know we would be traveling on the same bus, not understanding where everyone has, you know, who you've interacted with, where, you know, what venues or facilities you've been in, all these things. All of us would be on the same bus for 4 hours. It was the middle of the winter, so the windows wouldn't be down. We wouldn't have fresh air, all of these things.
Risk.
Right.
Liability.
So I was thinking risk management, high stakes, talking to a lot of people, went all the way up the chain to the international organization just to kind of figure out precedents, what other organizations were doing. And we heard that they were basically canceling theirs unless individuals could get to the location on their own. And we said, well, this is 4 hours. We're not going to ask everyone to drive to do that.
Yeah.
So made that decision. We're not going. And as a leader, that was the right decision at that time. I mean, again, cases skyrocketed 300% in just a few days in this one state we were planning to have this retreat. And I caught some backlash from that. And initially, I was perplexed and also thinking, well, maybe questioning my decision. And then I realized, no, Shelley, you don't know what could potentially happen once everyone returns. What's happening, what the transmission piece of that. We would be traveling in the bus, both 4 hours up, 4 hours back. Like, this was the right decision. And so I share that because leaders make decisions that are unpopular.
Yeah.
And as a leader, you have to be settled within yourself to know that you did everything you could and that you made the right decision. Here's why I knew I made the right decision. I asked everyone at different levels, all the way up to the international group. What is our precedent? What is our risk management plan? What does our insurance look like? Is this even the right thing to do? I felt that I ran that up the chain to the extent that I needed to in order to then make the right decision. And today, years later, I will say that I made the right decision.
Oh, yeah.
Putting people on a bus for a total of 8 hours and then sitting in a room in a resort or a hotel or wherever for a couple of days during a time of high transmission that in that particular state, it had already skyrocketed. The number of cases had already skyrocketed. Like, that shouldn't have even been a question, but I did that just to make sure that I had a firm foundation for my case. But that's what leaders do, right?
Yeah.
They make deliberate decisions. We talked about that a little bit earlier.
Right.
And that was a deliberate.
Y'all would have been, could have been in the news as a super spreader moment. And
exactly.
Yeah, you bypassed all of that. You kept everyone in mind, like safety, longevity, like, oh yeah. And I can imagine, like, people were so looking forward to it. We do this every year.
Yeah, we were looking forward to it and had to cancel, you know, the previous year or 2 years because of the because of the pandemic. That was not going to happen on my watch.
Yeah.
And that was a deliberate decision that I made, and it was unpopular. And today I can still stand on, I made the right decision.
That's definitely validating my suspicion that you're a pretty good leader, based on what we know, even just what you've shared today. So as we're moving into the third and final segment, this megaphone piece, it's all about advocacy. You've mentioned about your experience with advocating for others, leveraging your voice to do exactly that. What's important to you in terms of, it could be a mission, it could be a specific message. You've mentioned passion as well. What lights you up as a leader? And further, what can we do as listeners, as allies, as people who share your values or are seeking good leadership? What's on your heart right now that you feel really, like, inspired to share? And give us some tips. Like, again, what do we do? Actionable. We want some calls to action here.
I'm going to share a couple of quotes, actually three, because the third one is my own quote. The first one is, do it with passion or not at all. That's Rosa Noshet Carey, excuse me. And then the second one, Mahatma Gandhi said, the best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. I love that quote because it helps me to lean into my passion. My passion is service. My passion is helping people. But I think what we have to do is we have to move from passion to purpose. And understanding your purpose beyond your talents and your innate skills and talents and abilities and gifts and things like that, what your purpose really is. So the one that I like to encourage people with is to keep looking forward to your North Star and let no one and nothing keep you from shining your brilliant light. If people saw themselves as that brilliant light, that just, when I walk into places, I think of bringing the sunshine, bringing the light. Like, again, you heard me earlier say, your listeners heard me earlier say too, you know, I'm wind at my back. Like, I walk in, I've got the wind at my back. I am passionate. I bring that, you know, breath of fresh air into the space, my whole self, authenticity. I roll in with that.
I love that you know this about yourself and, like, own it.
Own it. And we have to own whatever that is. If you walk into a space and you light it up, do that every time,
right?
Wherever
Don't
you're going.
Back.
Don't hold back. That is you being authentic. We just had a whole conversation about authenticity. Mm-hmm. That is you being authentic. So I'd love for your listeners to be proactive, to really reinforce the values and the things that they consider important. Integrity is important to me. Ethics are important to me. Civility. Treating people right, being respectful, being kind, and expressing gratitude. Those are values for me. Being thankful, no matter whether it's something someone might consider small or it's a large gift, whatever it is, be thankful, be grateful, practice that gratitude. And so being proactive, expressing yourself, getting out there. And if I had known when I was a teenager that I could make mistakes in front of people and it would be okay, I probably wouldn't have held myself back for as long as I did. It took someone giving me a hint about how to stand up in front of an audience. And her name is Sonia. I hope one day she'll listen to this podcast episode. It took Sonia giving me a hint for me to realize I had any confidence whatsoever to be able to stand on a stage to speak. And I went from speaking and talking about being proactive and just getting out there and doing it scared. I started with serving on a panel. I moved from serving on a panel to introducing people. I moved from introducing people to being a keynote speaker.
And being introduced.
Being introduced as a keynote speaker. I took a path that even back then I didn't realize the intent behind it. When you have stage fright, you probably don't want to jump right out there and be the keynote speaker. That's the deep end. Woo. For you. You can wade in the 3-foot water area if you serve on a panel in a small venue or a small setting, maybe something like a town hall, if that's not too much for you. And then you move from the panel to 2-minute introduction of the keynote speaker or a 2-minute introduction of someone that you know, love, or is dear to you. And then you move into being able to lead a workshop. And then maybe you join the big stage. Like, you don't do it all at once. So what I'm recommending to listeners is that you chart out that path. Not that it has to have anything to do with speaking, but chart out the path that's going to work for you, whether it's with speaking or it's becoming a better leader, like we've talked about. Take some leadership courses. Find a mentor. I like to say to people, I enjoy motivating, mentoring, and then mobilizing people. I have 2 mentors, and I love them dearly. They've been with me for decades now, and they have taught me so much. And guess what? Neither one of them is in the same line of work or has done the same line of work that I have done in my career. We have led 2 completely different, or 3 in this particular case, but we've led different career paths. And they're both now retired, and I still gain so much from the conversations that I have with them. Finding a mentor was the best thing that happened to me, and I was blessed to have more than one. I actually have 2 that have been with me for most of my lifetime and who keep me grounded and balanced and help me think through things that are leadership oriented. We talk a lot about leadership and what it looks like for sure. So being proactive, taking that first step, making mistakes, doing it scared. If you make a mistake, guess what? That proves that you're human. Mm-hmm. Doesn't prove anything else. But we have to step out. Be scared to do it, but do it. Because if you don't do it, you don't make mistakes, you don't learn. And then you don't advance.
Right.
So that's a lot of don'ts in one sentence. But if you are proactive and you do take the first step, you can advance. You learn over time. Those are some of the ways that that I think through my career. Just like the story that I've learned, just like the story of using my voice to advocate for women and children who had experienced domestic violence. I never would have thought that that would be my turning point, but it was. Because I could use my voice, and I felt comfortable and confident in using my voice and in my delivery, I could speak now on behalf of women and children who had endured so much traumatic experiences, who needed additional help and resources and access and opportunity to things that they didn't even know to ask for, but that I could use my voice to ask for on their behalf.
There was a turn of phrase you used, and I don't know if you noticed, but it was something along the lines like, it's one of the best things that ever happened to me. And something stuck out as you were talking about being proactive versus reactive. When I hear those, as a word nerd, right? The active piece sticks out. Active as opposed to passive. being involved in your own learning, in the process of making mistakes, in seeking out a mentor, because they don't just fall from the sky into your lap, do they?
No.
Right? It is having, I don't know if it's confidence, maybe you can help me here, like, how do you do something scared? It's like having the wherewithal, like being willing to take a chance on yourself. Again, as opposed to, I think the reactive folks are in the passive camp, even though we've got active in the word. They're over here just sort of waiting to see what happens. Time is one of the most precious resources that we have. And I think if you're sitting and waiting, I won't say you're wasting time, because who knows, right? Maybe you've got something cool marinating on your stove or whatever. That's a metaphor, okay? But the active piece, like really going after it, going to get it. Right? Asking questions, meeting people, even if it's scary, like that is going to get you wherever you want to be faster, even if where you want to be is early retirement, right? Like, I don't really want to work. I want to do nothing. That's fine. But you got to get from point A to point B. It's that active piece versus passive. Like, things don't, I mean, the trauma, you mentioned, you know, the experience with domestic violence, that is, that's a different situation. Those things are happening to those people. They are, they're survivors, they were victimized, right? They were traumatized, but yeah, just get moving, you know?
I would really encourage your listeners to do just that, let's do one thing, take one step, take one action, whatever that is. To improve your well-being, to take better care of yourself. We all could probably practice self-care a little bit better than we do.
Especially these days.
And especially these days. But do one thing that's going to improve your life. We have this one life. And so as I'm thinking, what are we doing with it? How are we helping ourselves or others? What are we doing with the life that we've been given? And if we take that one step, who knows where it could lead?
That's all for this episode of Attention Confidential. But of course, the conversation doesn't end here. I encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning, and most of all, keep sharing your stories. If today's conversation spoke to you, please pass it on. And if you have a story of your own you'd like to showcase, I am here and ready to listen. You can find all past and future episodes at selfmagnitude.com/podcast. And until next time, remember this: your voice matters.